Hello and welcome for another episode of Continued Conversation. My name is Sven, and you might be wondering why this opening is not done by Bettina this time. But there's a good reason for it, because Bettina today is one of the guests. And why that is the case, I will explain in just a bit, but let me introduce our guests first. Maybe Bettina, you say a couple of words about yourself, although that might be a bit weird. But then we also have Axel and Verena from the EIF team, and you can also say a couple of words about yourself. Let's start with Bettina, maybe.
I'm Bettina, and I've been with the EIF for 14 years, and I'm still very much enthusiastic by this work.
I'm Verena Schweikart. I'm usually cutting this episode, and I will also with this one. I have been with the EIF since 2004, so 21 years now, and I'm in charge of everything that's online and digital at EIF.
Cool. Then Axel.
I'm Axel. I started to work for the EIF 4 years ago, and I'm organizing these seminars.
Okay, cool. So now we have kind of the whole package. And I think most of our seminar participants or most of our listeners will exactly know this kind of trio. Bettina, of course, from the very first moment, from the opening, from the emails to the final words, so to speak, at the graduation dinner. Verena, who is sending the email invites, who's guiding through the meet and greet, and Axel, who is taking care of the logistics, the flights and whatnot. So we have the whole package here assembled, and we are reflecting together on the last 30 years of the EIF, on the spirit of the EIF, because this year is the anniversary. We had a Liberty Campus to celebrate the anniversary, but at the same time, it is a bittersweet anniversary because the EIF in its current form will close its doors on the Magic Mountain in Gummersbach. And that, I think, is a good occasion to also capture the essence of the EIF for everybody so that it doesn't just fade out, but that the spirit is eternally captured in this podcast and in the work of all of us. So let's get through a couple of things that I think are essential to the EIF. And that, I think, is just the raw quantity of people that have been attending seminars of the International Academy for Leadership. So I put Verena to the task to do kind of some digging into the data, some data wizardry. And Verena, how many seminars in total have been conducted by the EIF over the years?
What would you guess in 30 years?
I mean, I will not come up with a good number, but I think 30 years, and on average, I would just guess like 10 to 15. So 300, 400 seminars, something like that.
It was exactly 423 seminars in 30 years.
Not too bad, huh? Not too bad. Do you have the name of the very first seminar somewhere?
I think it was about political strategies, but I have to look it up again.
And political strategies, I think, you know, like we should send some of my own party are still there. So it's still highly relevant until today. Anyways, how many alumni does the EIF have?
Yeah, we did some countings for the anniversary for 30 years, and I came up with until the very last seminar we had this year, we count about 8,847 alumni.
That's almost as big as the audience of this podcast. So we are almost there. So almost 10,000 alumni. And I think that speaks for itself, how many people have touched or got in touch with the EIF over the years. For how many countries did people come?
130.
So I don't know what's the official count nowadays of how many countries there are, but I think it's around 190 countries, somewhere like that. So from most, if not the vast majority of countries, people have visited Gummersbach, the very remote part of Western Germany, to discuss all sorts of topics from liberal strategy to like the open society. And maybe let's close this kind of data part or the fact finding mission with some remarks on like who were these people who attended EIF seminars. Are there any cool stories about famous people who went there? Now I'm looking towards especially Bettina, from which, what profile did people have? And maybe you can give us like a little bit of a grandiose story of on the people that came to Boomer Spa?
A grandiose story. So I think every participant who came brought with him or her a lot of experience and a lot of curiosity and a willingness to exchange. The seminars, because it's the Academy for Leadership, aimed at leaders, political leaders, think tank leaders, leaders of social organizations, NGOs, and so on and so forth, or future leaders. So organizations who wanted to develop their own staff and talents for the future. And all the organizations that could nominate participants to come to Gummersbach were partners of the Naumann Foundation. 90% have been partners of the Naumann Foundation. So they had to apply. And at the end, from, I don't know, up to 60 applications, we then could invite around 24 for each seminar. And these people, some of our participants kept us posted where they, what path they took. From others, we heard from the news. So there are participants who later became vice ministers or ministers, even a president of a country. I do not drop names because that's how everybody expects me to do. Because I also think that the path that people took and the success they had in their life, in their professional or political life, is not because they have been at an IF seminar. I think we added, we helped develop skills and knowledge. We connected people. But at the end of the day, this is, for me, a great indicator of the kind of people who came to Gummersbach. Those who really were ambitious and enthusiastic and resilient to follow a political path and to change things in their country towards more democracy, more rule of law, and so on. So, and it makes us proud to have been partners for a week or two for these alumni.
And I think what you say speaks very much to kind of the spirit and also the modesty of the EIF, right? Like, because 2 weeks, or you know, sometimes it's just 1 week, is still very transformational, right? And it leaves a mark in people's journey. But nevertheless, I think none of you ever tried to credit the EIF in the journey. And I think that's on the one side honest. On the other side, of course, it is very modest, right? Because nevertheless, some people acquired skills or the right network, or maybe at times also the motivation, because some people come to Gummersbach and they don't realize, oh my God, I have to do something. And it's like a newly found inspiration that they often take away from their time in Gummersbach. And many of them have taken a journey where they transform their countries, where they change things. Like if I look towards countries such as South Africa, where the Democratic Alliance and other partners, of course, used the EIF very heavily over the years. So I think there is certainly impact that is felt and could even be quantified. But I think it's already a good indicator of the spirit of the EIF not to overcredit, you know, not to overemphasize their own role in these particular journeys.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. And I sometimes get the feedback from alumni I still am in touch with. They said, oh, I would have never thought I would go forward in politics, but having been at the IAF, having been inspired by the other participants, by you, by the facilitators, that gave me another push of energy, and it also I could find my calling through this because I had time to develop that and to listen to my call. Some became facilitators themselves because they've been in a seminar and then discovered, oh wow, that is really, that could be my calling. I want to be a facilitator in the future, and they pursued that path. So yeah.
And I think many of the facilitators that facilitate for the EIF took especially that journey, because, you know, like they that's what you want to do. If you experience it, you really do a lot to actually become part of that family, so to speak. Good. Now, I think we captured a little bit of how the EIF envisions its own role within the ecosystem. And I want to explore that a little bit more by letting you think what were the magic ingredients, or what did the EIF stand for? What is kind of the foundational idea? And usually I could just start and ask Bettina, because, you know, in Bettina leading the EIF for so many years, you could just say, oh, this is what we had in mind. And then like Verena and Axel would just follow through. But I will take the reverse order. And I will ask first Axel and then Verena to say, what made the EIF special to you? Or what do you think it adds to the liberal ecosystem? What are some of the magical ingredients that you see and saw? And I will start with Axel. You have been with the EIF for some years, but still are the rookie amongst the teams here. So are amongst the group here. So Axel.
I think for me, it's the overall idea to connect like-minded people somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Gummersbach. I mean, Gummersbach is a really, really small town, and you cannot experience a lot there. But you build these strong relationships between people, and I think that matters. And those relations, they keep on going when they leave Gummersbach as well. And this, yeah, builds a strong liberal network, not only around the academy, but also beyond.
Yeah, I think the place certainly mattered a lot. Like, you phrased it that there's not much to do in Gummersbach, and I think Verena would disagree with that notion, but I think mostly it is because you can't escape to a certain degree, right? Like, you are almost forced into interaction, and like that by the most positive framing. And having done so many seminars over the years, also in big capital cities like myself, I would say, you know, this is one of the charms of the EIF in Gummersbach as it was, right? And I think that's one thing that everybody who looks into like developing leadership academies should take into account. It's just a different flavor once you put people together in such a remote place rather than in the center of Berlin, where there are many different attractions and you're just like waiting to jump out of the seminar room, no matter how interesting the stuff is that you are doing. Location and place matters. And like anybody who does facilitation will tell you that right away. And of course, the Magic Mountain in Gummersbach played to that narrative. Verena, what made the EIF so special? What do you think are some of the magic ingredients that you saw over the years?
Yeah, I think also basically offering that space for participants, a safe space where people could openly discuss, and then also to facilitate them through the learning journey, to explore learnings themselves. So we did not missionize people, but people did work together to come to their own conclusions. And we had the facilitators who guided the processes and invited different opinions and to have an open dialogue on topics and have experts and different voices and, yeah, discuss things. I think this was also a big part of that magic, to bring people together, that they also experience that, okay, I'm from Ghana and there's somebody from Brazil. Usually we would not meet, but we discover that we have the same problem and maybe we can find a solution together or similar solution, or we can learn from each other. So I think that was, yeah, part of the magic.
I think what you say is very important, right? And that's not because I'm a facilitator myself, but there is a participative nature to each EIF seminar, and there is a lot of space for exploring ideas that comes very organically from the group, but everything is facilitated properly and I think highly skilled. And I have rarely found an organization or a place or a space where so much emphasis is put on facilitation, right? Where this whole didactic process, this whole learning process is properly professionally facilitated by two facilitators. A lot of workshops that I attend are facilitated by just one person. So if I had to just add one ingredient that I think makes it very successful, is like the facilitation philosophy, like that there are two facilitators, often from very different countries with very different backgrounds, to facilitate a process and to take real ownership. So I think that that plays a crucial role. Now, Bettina, you have heard the remote place, the participative nature, the facilitation, the, of course, multicultural setting. What else would you add to the spirit of the EIF and its ingredients?
Fine, because our seminars were a week or 2 weeks long. The 2 weeks with a little, or not little, but an excursion in between. So people... everybody could emerge a little bit in Germany, get to know more, feel it, and have new experiences together in those trips. So time for me is also a big part of the magic. It really comes together. I mean, we identified the topics that were relevant to our partner organizations around the world, so that we offered topics that were relevant, that were at the pulse of time, if you want to say so. So also we addressed some pain points that liberals and Democrats around the world suffer from. And then we had, we did a huge effort to organize every step of the journey that not only began with the welcome evening and a drink in Gummersbach, but way before. So we prepared people who came here. The whole, they were never alone on their trip, so to speak. So because for some it was the first trip ever out of their country, and then to Europe, and then not to know what to expect. So we would prepare them as well. And then the whole organization of the seminar itself and the flow that came from the scripts and a massive ingredient of the whole magical experience here for me are the facilitators and the design of the overall design of the seminars, because we always looked for facilitators who are not only able to facilitate well, but who also brought to the room own experience, a lot of deep knowledge in on the topics. And we wanted them to be authentic. So every facilitator had a little bit their own style, which I really appreciate. I would have never just put a script in front of a facilitator and say, come for 2 weeks and facilitate this. So it was, you know, the facilitators brought their whole self into that as well. And I think that was a great value added to the seminar and for the participants to be able to trust their facilitators, since they were authentic and could have one-on-one talks in the evenings, in the breaks, over lunch. So it was without stress. You had time to connect to others. You had time to think about yourself. You had time to dive deep into a topic and not just scratch the surface. Practical things they can take home. And overall, I think a smooth journey that made strangers who came here friends when they left here.
Yeah, I mean, Bettina, I must say, like, you know, we have done many podcast episodes together, but usually we are kind of hosting and you are just a terrible guest, because, you know, like, that is so hard to moderate you. There are now 1,000 things we need to unpack, okay? And you know, I mean it in the most generous way, because this was a lot of things that you just mentioned in passing, which are, I think, tremendously important to unpack for everybody. I think the time issue is one. Let's start maybe with that. And I think it is crucial to understand that this kind of transformational experience can only happen if you have sufficient time. Because I think what I also learned at the EIF is that things take time, that If you rush things through, you will not have that impact on people. Like, for example, it takes 1 or 2 days to fully arrive. And I think you gave people the space to arrive. I don't know, and you can answer that if you want, when the whole design of the opening evening was thought through. And, you know, like, for example, that people arrive on the Sunday evening and there's no real program. I mean, there's the introduction to the foundation. We all know it. There's the like playful interaction with the house. The goose chase. Well, did you think about that deliberately? Because for me, it's so telling that people are not left alone. So there is some program, but it's like mainly aimed at arriving for people. Did you think about it? Or also to Verena, was that always the case? Or, you know, like, did it evolve over time? So I see, Bettina, you might want to jump in and walk us through.
That was something that was established when I started leading the IAF. So when I began, I looked at all the different features and thought, is it still relevant? Is it still modern enough? Is it still up to date and on demand by the participants? And that welcome phase, I thought, was great already, well established. Jörg Dehnert, the first director here in Gummersbach of the IAF, had established that already. And that, you know, bringing people over the threshold and making them feel welcome, but give them time to adjust to the room, to the facilities, to the others. So the first night was always, when I took over, we made it more playful. At some point, we introduced the goose chase so that instead of telling people that there is a bar and a sauna and when there is lunch or breakfast, we let them discover that on the first night and let them discover it in smaller groups. So at the end of the day, they already knew 4 or 5 other participants a little bit better because they have made all the assignments from that goose chase that were funny, but also informative. I don't know, Verena, Axel, since you have also participated as a proper participant in one of the seminars, maybe you can add also to that journey from your point.
And maybe I add a question to Axel, because Axel will be or was present at many of those introductory evenings on the Sunday evening. Just a direct question. How much can you, as somebody who is responsible for the logistics, can enjoy the Sunday evening? Because I think there is still a lot of operational stuff in the background. So Axel, what do you think?
So usually when we start the evening, I can already enjoy it, yes. But the day is very tough for me. So usually I start at, I would say, 7:30 to 8 in the morning when participants arrive already in Gummersbach, in Cologne, or at Frankfurt Airport or train station. And then sometimes there are accidents on the road, flights get canceled, and that's a lot of stress all over the day. But it's a really good feeling in the evening when I noticed that everyone arrived really well at the academy. Some of them already know the place from previous visits. And it's always nice to see how people connect already during the goose chase.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned is like really important. Like the day of the arrival really matters. And having looked behind the curtain, I know how stressful it is, because it feels like every week there is something, you know, either it is a strike or there are planes that are not on time. Then there is luggage lost and then people are too late and they didn't really pay attention who to contact when they are delayed, you know. So I sometimes wonder whether we can, expect better from adults. But as soon as you're taken care of, as the EIF is taking care of you, you are outsourcing all your responsibility to Axel and or whoever else it is who is responsible, people like Lena. Okay, cool. Did a lot of things change, Verena, like in terms of the structure of the seminars, or did it always have this spirit that Bettina described so well?
Well, for the first arrival Sunday, I think the overall schedule was always the same, that we start with the welcome reception, then we have a joint dinner, and then we go to our seminar room and get the introduction of the foundation. But what has changed? I remember when I arrived at IAF, we used to read a one page of text that you are not allowed to smoke on the rooms, or I don't know, when is dinner time, stuff like that. So it was really tiring for participants, I guess. So if you have traveled 14 hours and you just want to sleep and you have to listen to that, it's quite boring. Then we later did...
They had to read it themselves or somebody read it out?
The staff read it to the participants, at least. But yeah, that was different. We later developed a slideshow, which was a bit more entertaining. Then Birgit Lamm, who was a director before Bettina, she kind of did a little tour, a walking tour through the academy, explained also some things about the architecture and what the architect had in mind with the building. And this was also super interesting. And then you also saw some of the rooms, the sauna, the bar, all the important places. And then we later came up with a scavenger hunt through the house, which I think was the best combination in the end, because people already got to know each other in a playful way, and you got to know the house and part of the staff. So you had to interact with the reception, with people in the kitchen and people at the bar. So I think that was this combination of the activity, the teamwork, and learning about the house. I think that was in the end the best way to start.
Yeah, and I'm still busy, you know, unpacking everything that Bettina said. So we said, like, okay, the time really played a crucial role. 1 or 2 weeks is really transformational. And because I think the excursion for the longer form seminars really added on this experience together, right? It was not just, okay, we are sitting in a room discussing stuff, but we are experiencing the learnings by also changing place. Coming back to, I think, what Axel said in the beginning, that place really matters for learning and facilitation. So I think all of that was encapsulated in the EIF programs. One thing that Bettina also mentioned and that I think is worth highlighting a little bit more was the program design, and maybe you also give us a little bit more of a glimpse behind the curtain, because I think for some of the topics that were picked in the EIF, they really try to reflect, of course, the needs of the partners and of liberal organizations and the movement in general, but also especially the topical ones on things that need a revisiting or that need an update, so to speak. I always remember the one example that we brought up now many times, the seminar Liberalism versus Populism, that I think, Bettina, at one point you had in mind and asked us to develop it. And if we look at it from the perspective of 2025, I think even the wording liberalism versus populism has become so central to the debates about it. And at that time, I'm not sure it was yet established, you know, like it was, I think, 2016, 2017 when this came up. And I think that was the early stages of like political scientists trying to establish a theory of populism. So how did this program design or like the program selection go about? Like, did the EIF meet? What was the process?
Well, of course, we had a lot of conversations with participants who have been here. So we got inspiration also from the participants when we had discussions or exchanges in the bar or over lunch. I picked up a lot of topics that, beside the one that we were dealing with, was important for them. And I kept them in mind. And then we asked our colleagues in the offices around the world what from their point of view would be seminar topics that would be important for their work, because we saw ourselves not as a spaceship, not connected to the work of the Naumann Foundation, but we were in the middle of the Naumann Foundation's work. So we wanted to be of service also for the project offices. And so we asked them, what are the pain points in your region, in your countries? What do the partners say? And then we made a very long list. And they would cast votes, which seminars for them would be the most important ones. And then those with where the demand was highest for, those topics we picked up. So I would suggest new topics, but the colleagues from around the world would suggest new topics. Facilitators would suggest new topics because they were also traveling around the world. Of course, also Verena, Axel, all of us were also always listening to what is going on around the world in the different regions. And then at the end, we would condense that into our yearly program. And if there were new topics, then I would talk to facilitators who could who would want to pick it up and how. And then we elaborated on that in a longer exchange. What should go into it? What is important? What are the basics? Where do we start? How well known is the topic in, you know, in research and so on? So we would prepare that for a while. So we would never start a year with a brand new topic, if avoidable. So we had time, and that brought it in together. And the facilitators over time knew what makes IAF the IAF, and they adopted the script and design to that to our style, to the way we work, and of course based always on liberal values that we share deeply. So it was never cumbersome. It was always a joy to develop a new seminar.
And I think every year looked in terms of the annual planning quite differently. There has been some stables, I think. And maybe you can give us there a little bit more insight. How much of the seminars did you keep like stable from one year to the other? Because you can't like roll over a completely new schedule, right? You just want to bring in some new and test some new topics, but at the same time, you want to keep some of the established ones that are also in desperate need. You know, there is always a need for facilitation seminars or like something on populism was also, I think, very stable over the last couple of years, because unfortunately the populists are here to stay. So how was the mix?
Well, there were some skills program like communication or political strategy, as were already mentioned. Verena, Axel, please add to the list. For me, it was also young leaders. Facilitation became a hot topic over time.
Hot topic in a sense of much appreciated, let's...
Much appreciated, very much in demand, because facilitation is more than just passing around the word in the group. It's really accompanying a journey. It's leadership. Facilitation and leadership have a lot of common elements. So Verena, Axel, which one would you add or two?
I would also say topics on human rights.
Yeah.
So sometimes it was more like on, I don't know, on rule of law, or maybe in the last years it was on business and human rights. So we had a different focus on topics, but I think there was always human rights topics, or freedom of the press was always there. Leadership, of course.
Market economy, of course.
Yeah.
Axel?
And in the last years, we also developed programs about the green side of liberalism, because the ecological topic was more important, and also on geopolitics as well.
Yeah.
And I think the examples that you mentioned is also reflected in kind of the podcast structure that we now have, right? Because we have, I think, always three different pairings of the facilitators to also reflect, I think, the three pillars of the EIF, at least that's how I see it from the outside, which is the theory internal liberal debates, and then the ones that are more public policy oriented, right? And we shouldn't always mix those two. Like, they are, it's a different crowd too, like the more liberal movement, ivory tower topics versus those who work in think tanks or government, right? These are separate conversations often, and different audiences that you also pick from when you invite for an EIF seminar. And then lastly, facilitation and leadership with Marieke and Clinton, and the public policy one is with Rainer and Arpita. So all of them are reflected also in a different facilitator pool, in a different seminar pool, because I think that's the mix that the EIF always offered, right? Like there are seminars on all of those three different aspects for different target audiences within the partner spectrum of the Naumann Foundation. Good. Then I think we have dissected a little bit of Bettina's initial remarks. I will go maybe now towards, again, more in the kitchen and how the sausage is made, you know, like, because there's still much more to say on especially the facilitation aspect of things. But let's look and give our listeners a little bit of an overview how these seminars are actually conducted in the background or organized in the background. And I will start with whoever wants to go first, but I think Axel, it would be most interesting to hear from you. How long would you say do you start a seminar in terms of planning process ahead of time? So we all know the participants arrive on a Sunday evening, and that's where my job kind of starts. You know, like, of course, I do a lot of prep. I have to organize a lot of stuff, you know, but that's where I get all the good, fun element of it. And I think for you, that's where a lot of your stuff is already over. So how far ahead are you starting with your seminar preparations?
Usually we start, like, I would say 5 months before. But you also start there because we meet for the, we call it purpose call, where we talk about the purpose of the seminar, what is our main goal, which we want to achieve. We also speak about the target group. And then we, first of all, we prepare the abstract, which will be handed to the partners so they can apply for the seminar. Usually the nomination deadline is 3 months before the seminar starts. And from this point on, it gets more and more intense, I would say. So we then select the participants. And once we know who will be our participants, at this point, we can already start to develop the program to also cater to the needs of the participants. And
when do you start booking flights and stuff? Like, I think, you know, that's a lot of the... our logistics in the background, right? And they have to start quite early. So 3 months before the selection and, you know, like, I think emailing out that they are confirming. But when do you start with all the logistics behind it?
Once the participants are confirmed, we go ahead with the flight booking, yes. An optimal case, I would say it's 2.5 months before the seminar starts. Some of them have to apply for visa as well. Which sometimes takes some time.
I mean, that's a long time ahead because there's ongoing seminars all the time, right? And I think the logistical side is often overlooked, but because you need to have a whole team doing this. And of course, besides the hard logistics like flights, visas, and stuff, I think one also has to think about, you know, the content, the experts, also the social media coverage. We will come to that in a second. But just give us maybe an overview. How many people are involved in a seminar preparation? Like, what's the team like?
I would say in the preparation team, there are, of course, Bettina, Verena, myself, Olena. Then the facilitators, of course, the drivers as well, but they start their process, I think, 3 weeks before the seminar starts. Then, of course, the Theodor Heuss Academy as well. We need to check with the house how we would like the rooms to look like. We have to speak about the eating habits of the participants with the kitchen. So I would say in the core teams, there are 10 to 15 people.
Yeah,
yeah, but you know, also, also give credit to Axel and Lena and also Verena when she organized the seminar or was in charge of the organization. I mean, as I said, either Axel or Lena or Verena were in charge of the overall organization and did a lot of the all the nits and gritty pieces of this long and hard process. And I remember when I started here in 2012 that we had 8 weeks before a seminar that the nominations came in. And we had to move it earlier and earlier and earlier, because traveling, I mean, we always promote open borders, but getting a visa for the Schengen area is really not easy. The embassies are overwhelmed with travelers who want to have a visa. So the poor participants needed 3 months in advance to apply for an appointment at the embassy to finally apply for a visa. So that made it even more complicated for us. Because then you also have people who drop off in the course of a quarter of a year, and then we had to renominate and so on and so forth. Most was on the shoulder of either Axel, Lena, or Verena in those times.
It just gives me a headache thinking about it, or like hearing about it. But Axel, you had something to add, right?
Yeah, I would like to add something, or maybe tell a little story about the visa process.
Please, please.
Was 1 year ago when I learned that some participants apply at the French embassy for a Schengen visa, because it's so bureaucratic to get a German visa at the German embassy. And like Bettina said, it takes 8 to 10 weeks just to get an appointment. And so it's easier to apply in another country's embassy inside the Schengen space, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the same for when I lived in Turkey. Then we applied with the Danish embassy just to get a Schengen visa. But okay, enough talk about the visa and the horrible logistics. There's besides the clear cut, hardcore flight booking, visa appointments, talking about eating habits kind of things. There's of course also political education, and I think that's where I want to shift the focus to Verena, and especially the work that you did with the Instagram channels, the podcasts, and the other offers that the EIF has. How do you think and where do you start conceptualizing what kind of content you want to put out? Because, you know, like you put out content on all of the seminars and you can't attend all of the sessions and you're not involved in all of the processes. So how do you think about political education? Also, because the audience is very heterogeneous of the account. There is somebody maybe following the Instagram account who has attended 10 years ago a seminar on strategic communication, who now gets exposed to interesting reads on geopolitics. That's quite different. So how do you think about your mission in political education and what kind of content you want to churn out?
Well, in the best case, I already attend the purpose call that Axel mentioned. So I get, before the seminar planning really starts, I get your ideas of the facilitators and of the team, how the seminar will be developed. And then I already have hopefully some ideas on what to do. And then I think at the latest, when there's the program ready and I see how you are planning the different learning, the experts that you're having, and in another best case, I'm also attending these sessions and get the learnings and also see what people developed in working groups and can see how their journey was through this seminar and can pick up some of the points. So of course, a 12-day seminar or 8-day seminars, I cannot show on Instagram. You know, I can just pick some of the, maybe the most interesting learnings or the most surprising learnings, or I don't know, what I imagine to be relevant or interesting also for our target group. Because as you said, there are different levels of knowledge that people have already, and I try to start at a lower point and then also build that up and I don't know, explain why the topic is relevant at all, what are some of the issues there, and what are the points that we are talking about in the seminar, what discoveries we make through the discussions, through the experts, and try to cover that on Instagram. But yeah, as I said, it's just some of the topics that I can pick up. And then we're lucky to have this podcast where we can also invite our experts and get a bit deeper discussions on it, because, yeah, it's easier to deliver it through this format, of course.
Yeah, what I think was always remarkable with the EIF account is that there is always the easy way of just covering an event. And I think many organizations do that, right? There is a group picture here. There is like a glimpse from a session there. But it was, it, and is still until today focused on the learning aspects, right? Like distilling what kind of interesting talking points are out there without actually you having to see much from the seminar rooms itself. So there's like reading recommendations or the core essential ones. It does really what political education should do. And it's not just event coverage, because a lot of accounts that I follow from liberal organizations, they cover what they do, not like in terms of content, but the process. And if you're not involved in the process, if you're not there on the ground, you will not get what it is all about. You just see, oh, they are doing stuff, right? So here, I think you put a lot of focus on the content, right? And I think that's where you try to steer the ship towards. But what is, I think, and maybe I also will ask that question to Axel and Bettina in a second, what is in this process to you, Verena, most annoying and maybe most fun? So we have both the dialectical elements there. In this whole process of designing the content to cover and go along with the seminar, what is the most fun and what is the most annoying? What would you say?
Oh, that's a difficult question. Of course, it's easier to answer the fun question because it's, of course, fun to get up with the ideas, to come up with the ideas, with the creative process, which I like the most. Of course, I'm lucky to be able to attend the sessions whenever I'm there. But on the other hand, of course, we can't attend all of the sessions because at some point I have to create Instagram posts and research on the content as well, because I also have to understand the things I'm talking about. And then I have to decide, okay, what to pick, because it's just so much going on in the seminar. If it's just the discussion, the group works, I mean, you have the art labs, you have the book recommendation that I'm stealing from the facilitators, the experts, there's just so much going on. And at some point I have to decide what to cover, what makes sense to a broader audience. What's relevant for the target group? Yeah, to pick that, to make a decision, and also to be able to have the time to both attend the sessions and to create the content in the end.
That's not really annoying, but you get away with it, Verena. It's like if you win a job, you wouldn't ask people what is your weakness. Yeah, I'm a perfectionist, you know. What is most annoying about your job? Oh, it's just so interesting that I don't have time for everything. I will speak maybe on behalf of you, and you can add. And I don't want to speak on behalf of you, but on behalf, I think, of somebody who is creating content, is of course not always you don't always get the traction, right? And I think what is annoying with our bubble sometimes is that, like, we don't promote our own work enough. And I think that's a message to all of you. Like, when you find good content creators in your space, like, help them to and share their content that they put out. And I think over the time that is, you know, like, I think, and I know how much work you put into all of those posts. If they don't get sufficient traction, you're like wondering, you know, is it me or whatever? But I think it's the liberal bubble, you know, all of us struggle with that to a certain degree. So I answered for you, Verena, but I see you nodding. Would you agree that this can be sometimes annoying?
Yeah, but I think that's a problem or the most annoying thing for everybody who's involved with communications or social media work, that you spend a lot of time investing in this content and then you don't get the views or the engagement that you expected, maybe. But yeah, I think that's partly the algorithm. It's partly maybe it's not the content that people wanted to see in that moment, but yeah, that's what we have to live with, I guess. But in the end, yeah.
I mean, you know, our philosophy is sharing is caring, and that is not just sharing the content or leave a click. But we always said this should be a window into our seminars and the key learnings, so that those who cannot come here because it's 24 plus minus 2 participants who have then the possibility that is rather exclusive to come here and to follow the whole seminar. So at least we wanted to share with other people who are interested in the topic. And then, you know, just posing our faces with this expert or that group, that is... I don't know. It's not about...
That's what many people do and many organizations do.
And I find that annoying. I just scroll through that because it doesn't give me no inspiration. And I think Verena did hell of a great job to pack a lot of learnings into that small squares that you have, and always in a way that was not always the same, but every time different, and very entertaining. And a lot of work goes into that. That is often overlooked, because for some people, having an Insta channel is just making a selfie with someone famous, and that's no work, and then post it. I mean, that's a 5-minute job. But what Verena puts into that is a lot of research and bringing stuff together and then thinking about how to convey it, what is entertaining as well. And that is added value. And I think as a serious institution, for me, it would have been strange to just go for self-promotion or for rage clicks or whatever, just to spread what our name, but not our content. So we made the decision to go for content. And those who read it and enjoy it and give us feedback on it, these are the people we love to work for. That's why we strategically took that decision. And it's, you know, if you listen to this, go to the Insta channel of the IAF. You can go back through years of great content. We also had fun, right, Sven, when we did the Christmas countdown calendar in the last years. There was just...
You have to ask Verena that, because she kindly left it out when she was talking about annoying. And, you know, I can be sometimes very last minute with my submissions. But Verena, you also had a point, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to explain where we came from. I mean, yeah, before the pandemic, we actually did online seminars. It was my job to be in charge of the online seminar. So they did the pre-selection of participants, and we did the preparation of participants who already got invited to Gummersbach. We got them together in online seminars, very classic online seminars, not much live content there. We did not have Zoom back then or live chat. So it was a forum and it was text to read and tests or a quiz, something like that. So very classic. And then during the pandemics, we tried out a lot of things and the online world developed a lot, I would say. And after that, we also made the experience that people were just tired of screens. So we did a step back from the online seminars we offered for our alumni. We still offered the webinars to stay in touch and to have further discussions with each other. But for classic online seminars, we never returned to that. And I have to say that social media was my channel to play that online education content. So this was kind of the way to do it then. So maybe that was the basic idea, to play the political education content, so to say, and also to have that window into the seminar to use these channel for that. So it was never, okay, we also do self-promotion, I have to say. But the main idea is to show what we're doing in Gummersbach, because many people can relate because they have been there, and to also follow other participants' journey who are at the moment in Gummersbach, and to know what they learn. And yeah, that was a basic idea to use this channel for the educational work. And maybe that's why it's different and not just posting a group picture. But also to always think about what's a benefit for the viewer. What can they take from it?
Yeah, and I think that's well encapsulated. And again, that's why we're also doing this podcast episode, to kind of verbalize these kind of learnings and mission statements. And I think, you know, like when I follow a lot of organizations, I just think that they have not internalized such a purpose-driven, or I think even benefit-driven approach to social media. Like in the end, you also want to create value. And I think that is certainly the case, you know. When I look back at some of the postings, it really distills some of the talks of experts, even, you know, like that expert was talking about these and these and these and these categories, and then afterwards I see them reflected in a post, and I think that's just how it should be done. But good, getting a little bit back to what was annoying and fun, we still have Axel and Bettina with us. So Axel, what was the most fun, and maybe be blunt, you know, what was annoying in part of that process of preparing the seminars?
I think I will start with the annoying part. What is most annoying for me in the job is to deal with those administration stuff, administration guidelines from the ministry, and you have to prove the efficiency of every euro you spend. And this is sometimes very exhausting, I would say, because it doesn't bring you anywhere, because you just do documentation, you do reports and stuff like this. But on the other hand, the most fun thing I would say is to see the result in the end. So when you invest 4 months or 5 months into one program, and then finally everyone is there in Gummersbach, and you see how the group will grow together, you see how they all have a great experience, and then you finally go on excursion with the group, and then you see, okay, you just developed something within the just 1 week. And that's very impressive to see. And that's fun for me. Or that's
For me, sometimes, you know, like, and I think I learned over the years, what you describe as fun, for me, it can sometimes be annoying, right? Like, because you try to think, okay, what can we get to after 2 weeks? And from a facilitation perspective, especially if you have done it many years on the same topic, you always expect like, oh, we can get there and there. And then you see, it just still takes some time. And I think some of my colleagues from the facilitators will be able to relate to that. Sometimes you just go into a seminar and you assume so much background information. Knowledge is maybe the wrong term, you know, but like if you have spent so much time to wrestle with certain ideas or wrestle with certain concepts, you are just in a different mindset. And somebody just comes out of their day-to-day work, then in Gummersbach just arrives to a seminar, and they have to deal with a topic. It takes time. And I had to learn. I think that it takes time. And now I think the result part is more fun. And I think I got certainly better at like bringing people to a more tangible outcome. Let's just think about our TikTok videos that we shoot in some seminars. But that took certainly some time. Now, Bettina, that's, I think, for many of our listeners, very, very interesting what you will say. What is the most fun part? I think, you know, giving the graduation speech maybe, or what will be the most annoying part? So what would you pick on those two questions?
I agree with Axel on the annoying things with regard to admin. I mean, our budget is not limitless, so we try anyway to get the best out of every buck we spend. Then you have to document everything at length. I kind of understand that when you spend taxpayers' money, you have to be accountable. And I completely understand that and support being accountable. That's part of what we demand of our governments. So that is quite okay, but it goes, sometimes it takes weird exits. So that's one thing. And you spend a lot of time you would have, and that's the fun part, you would have want to be creative in that time. And you cannot administrate for 3 hours and then snip of fingers and be suddenly in a creative mode and mood and flow. That was sometimes exhausting also. But the fun part is to see the development within the individuals that are here over the time. I'm a psychologist, so that for me was always great to observe how people open up, started to trust each other in this group, because we created that safe space to see the fun. To see unconventional friendships, I might say, because we had participants from countries that officially are in war, so they officially cannot be friends, but here they bonded they discovered from both sides of the conflict that the others have a point as well. So it was really a deeper understanding when they left and really bonded and created friendships. That was, for me, a magic thing to observe. And it happened really a lot of times. And that was very special for me. And yes, giving the farewell dinner speech was always for me a moment, because I didn't want to screw it up. I knew it should be a high point at the end to also formally and emotionally close the seminar, since everybody on the last day happened or was often, there was this sad feeling in the room that, and people expressed it, oh, wow, now we have to leave, it ends, we see each other again, and I addressed that every time. I know that the facilitators and Axel and Mirena and Lena, some of them, the sentences I used have been more or less the same for 14 years.
When you said I'm a psychologist, I could immediately remember that you would say it's the seminar blues, you know? So like I can complete a sentence, you know?
But I felt it every time, because every group was different, every group was special, and every group was at a certain emotional stage, and I wanted to address that. And what followed after the content of it, I would take a minute out before I held the speech. I went outside, and then I thought, okay, what do I want everybody to know and take with them from me? And I never wrote down any of those speeches, and I just prepared the question I wanted to answer. I never prepared the answers before. So at the end of the speech, I sometimes was surprised what I said. So in a way, that was fun too, but I know I speak a lot, as I prove in this podcast, but I'm not a professional public speaker. So yeah, it was always also exciting for me.
Yeah, and I think what you mentioned, I mean, not explicitly, but below the, or like behind the lines, is between the lines, is that there is never a real routine. And I see you probably nodding to this day. You know, like I have also done a considerable amount of EIF seminars over the years, but there's never a real routine. And I think that's part of the learning also, that you should not fall into an autopilot, because that will never do justice to the participants and will never give justice to the effort that we put in there. So like everything that you say and that the other said is like, you know, every time it's a new challenge and a new, but also a new adventure to a certain degree.
And I also don't know, Axel and Verena, how often we said when something happened and we thought we have seen it all. And there were always new surprises and crises, individual crises that we had to deal with over the time. And I think there would have been many more were we to continue.
Yeah, you learn to improvise at IF. That's, I mean, if there's a speaker canceling last minute, if there's a traffic jam, if the flight is delayed, I don't know, participants get lost. You always have to find a quick answer, a solution, and try things out as well. And yeah, to improvise. And
yeah, so IF helped us to develop as well, especially the skill of thinking on our feet
and staying calm.
Yes, and carry on.
But it's not. It's a good segue, actually, to talk a little bit about some of the anecdotes that you maybe remember. And like we had a little exchange before we did this podcast, where I think especially Verena was worried that if we just exchange old stories, it might not be to the benefit of our listeners, because, you know, like that is the nostalgia maybe that not everybody can relate to. But I nevertheless think that there are some stories that tell you something about how the EIF operates or what this place has been about. So maybe you have a fun, interesting, weird or a sad anecdote that will stay with you, something very peculiar or particular that you want to share. I'm looking towards all of you who wants to give it a go, you know, who wants to start first. Just one episode, one anecdote, something that you will remember, Bettina. Let's go.
It's really sad.
I'm not sure I'm ready for sad, but let's go.
That's why I start, because then everybody else can get with to a higher note or a more funny vote. But we had a participant in 2014. In February, and when he applied for the seminar, he's been 17. I wasn't sure whether this is the right age to participate in a seminar on good governance at 17. And so I talked to my colleague. The young man was from Libya, and I talked to my colleague that was in charge of the project there at that time, and said, "Boy, it's awfully young. I don't know whether this makes sense. All the others are 30 plus and so on." He said, "You have to take him on. He's brilliant." I said, "Yeah, but he's a minor. I don't know what that means for me," and so on and so forth. And he said, "Please." So I looked it up again. I said, "Okay, he will turn 18 while he's here." My colleague advocated so strongly, so I will take him on board. And then he came. His name was Tawfiq Ben Saud, 1 year younger than my son at that time. And he was really brilliant. I still get goosebumps. Such a young person in such a difficult setting like Libya, and so smart, so well educated, so deeply thinking. I was absolutely flashed. We celebrated his 18th birthday. He went back. I thought, okay, there's hope for a country like Libya if they have the young people like Tawfiq. And half a year later, I got the news that he's been shot in his country. So that's something that really sticks with me. You can hear that I get emotional by that. But these are the participants who come here, and many have a great career afterwards, but some have to go back into a situation where they have to fear for their life and where their life is threatened. And that's not just that one country at that time. And that also explains, I think, the tremendous effort we put into accommodating everyone and to give our very best, because everything else would fail them. So yeah, I regularly think about that young man who might have made a change in his city or in his country, but hasn't been allowed to do so.
And I think, like, everybody who come, and I think you voiced it quite beautifully, like every participant that comes to the EIF is not just a participant, right? Like, it's the whole human experience. And like, I think the beauty about these long form seminars is also that you really get to know the human behind and the human story behind the participant. So, you know, like, almost that vocabulary fades, or this terminology fades into the background. So now, I don't know, after such a sad story, like, who wants to give it a go next, Verena or Axel?
I find it difficult to pick just one, because there are thousands of stories. And but I also have to say, the rule of IAF is what happens in Gummersbach stays in Gummersbach. This will continue to be there. So I will not share. I think the most funniest stories I cannot share. I'm sorry. But to pick one, I think, like, when we had our carnival parties in Gummersbach, I think that was always funny, because it was kind of a culture clash. Some people could relate a bit people from Brazil who also celebrate Carnival, some other countries. But for some, it was just crazy that we start drinking beer at 11 o'clock in the morning and that we cut people's ties, that we dress up in crazy costumes, that we just listen to, yeah, probably crazy music and dance around like crazy. That was kind of a culture, one of the many culture clashes that participants often experience in Germany, I guess. So I think that was one of the funny stories that I can share.
Yeah, no, it just reminded me that I think I never did a seminar during what we call in the South Fasching or Fastnet, which is the part where you dress up it's a pagan tradition to get rid of the bad spirits. Axel, or like Bettina, you want to still add?
No, just to the carnival. I mean, we're close to Cologne here. That explains that. And here it's more going against the authorities or mock the authorities in this part of Germany. But later we avoided to have a seminar during Carnival because it was also not so easy to get experts. Traveling was more difficult. Not everybody could enjoy it also. And also at the academy, at the Theaterhouse Academy itself, Carnival partying has faded, like in many parts of Germany that are a bit further away from Cologne. It has not been the same atmosphere anymore. So we said, okay, let's not do it over Carnival because it costs us half a day and that time is too precious to spend it for Carnival and to force people to be funny. That's not everybody's cup of tea. So we avoided it later on. But there were a lot of funny things. I mean, people dancing with the cows, Sven, in one of your seminars.
Yeah, or like getting their raincoats destroyed by the cars after dancing with the cows. But yeah, like Axel, what kind of funny, interesting, weird or sad anecdotes do you have?
As Verena said already, I think there are many, many funny stories about the IAF. What comes to my mind now is a story from last year. I think it was in November. And we had a seminar. I'm not sure. I think it was on strategic planning. And on Monday, two participants noticed that Paris Saint-Germain is facing Manchester City on Wednesday this week. And we had our one-day excursion on Wednesday as well. And they also found out that they there are still tickets available. So they bought three tickets and they went there with a friend. So when they arrived in Cologne, they took the train to Paris, went to the football match, then noticed, oh, there's no train back. So they spent the night in Paris and came back to the seminar the day after. I think they arrived in Cologne at around 10 o'clock in the morning and were again in the seminar room at around 2:33 in the afternoon. At one point, the facilitators and also we as the organizing team, we were kind of angry towards them because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and we spent so much money. But on the other hand, it was such a cool story because two of them were from South Africa, so it's more than 10,000 kilometers to go to Paris and to experience a match like this.
Yeah, I'm not sure what was the once-in-a-lifetime experience, the EIF or the Paris Saint-Germain game.
Both, of course, they are both.
But, I think over the years you learn that the human creativity and ingenuity is really limitless, you know. The EIF participants would always surprise you with one new thing that came up to their mind at one crazy bar evening. So I can very much relate.
And
good.
Also, nearly each seminar had their own running gag. So either it was nicknames or stories or dances or games they played. So when you introduced a mafia game for the evening, then they would play keep on playing that in a way and saying, you are mafia, I don't talk to you, and stuff like that. That was really funny. Songs. Yeah, a lot of things. So we could tell when we came the next day into the seminar room and the language had shifted a little bit with all those, secret formulas that we didn't understand, that something must have happened evening before. And that's also great to see that every group developed their own way of entertainment also in the evening and how they connected and what was funny.
Yeah, and I think you develop like some sort of spidey senses for how group dynamics are shifting based on what is going on in the evenings outside the seminar room. And I always say the most important learnings anyways happen outside of the formal sessions, like in the many exchanges that we provide space to. Good, and now we have been going on for quite a bit. So like I nevertheless want to go back to a familiar structure of this podcast. And usually we ask our guests to give us one book recommendation of what liberals should read. Now, this time I have been more liberal, like no pun intended here, and didn't ask them for like a literal book recommendation, although that's of course fine. But one recommendation, what people should pick up, what people should listen, read, watch. And I don't know who wants to give it a go. One recommendation from each one of you, what people should consume. The holidays are coming up, so I think lots of spare time, at least for some. So who wants to start?
I can start. I would like to recommend the book The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. And I also think during the last 4 years where I worked for the IAF, this book really shaped me, I would say. So I learned so much from it. And of course, you can also recognize how many things from this book are part of the IAF experience. And for this, I would like to recommend this maybe as a Christmas gift.
Yeah, one of the books that also shaped me and how I think about gatherings. I would not even use the word event anymore, right? Because even the terminology is here so deeply ingrained in me. Yeah, so The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker, we will link to that in the show notes. And it's something that I think is almost a Bible for most of the facilitators and the EIF staff. So a great recommendation. Thanks, Axel. Then who wants to go next?
There are so many more classic authors. For those who need more argumentation or want to think about liberalism, maybe in different words, Deirdre McCloskey's Why Liberalism Works is something that I think is great to go to. And I think we liberals need a bit more of an optimistic, encouraging mindset. So books like Abundance or Superabundance, Abundance by Ezra Klein and others, those books show that, you know, we are not doomed. Mankind is not doomed. We can live with the resources that we have if we are smart enough to do so. And there's also a podcast that is not a liberal author in the political philosophical sense, but Simon Sinek's A Little Bit of Optimism, I think, is also great to go to and think about our leadership. If we are engaged in politics and if we want to promote liberal values and safeguard them in our societies, I think we need to work on our leadership towards others and our engagement towards others and not fall into authoritarian traps or whatever people think leadership is or might be. So Simon Sinek and the Golden Circle to discover why are you doing things that makes it easier than to only think about what is it that I do and I just need to do it better, but to really reflect how we address the ones around us. So
yeah, so with Simon Sinek, we add another pillar of the EIF kind of superstructures, because Priya Parker is one for sure. Simon Sinek is, I think, also somebody who has been discussed many times in the seminar rooms. And then, of course, some of the guests, like, for example, Abundance, Superabundance, these are authors we were actually featuring, including Deirdre McCloskey, in some of our seminars. So that's more of the traditional experts that we had in our pool. So now, Verena, what would you add to the materials that we already have gathered?
I think I would also recommend two pieces that I got inspired to through IF work, I would say. So one is, well, I think they are both a bit similar. So one is How to Stand Up to a Dictator by Maria Ressa from the Philippines. And the other one is actually a movie, the movie Navalny, on the work of Alexei Navalny's opposition work in Russia. It's a super interesting documentation about his fight against the regime. And it moved me a lot. I also bought his biography, but I haven't read it, I have to admit. But that's certainly next. And I think these two persons fight against dictatorship, against the regimes in their countries, and to be that brave, to risk their lives to stand up and to lead an opposition or to fight these fights. This is inspiring and moving.
And I think that adds to the kind of last big pillar of the EIF's work, that was to inspire people to fight for the good cause. And I might say that with Maria Ressa as well as Alexei Navalny, we even had people from their team. So it's like also deeply linked to the mission of the EIF, from Rappler in the Philippines to actually people who worked for Alexei's team in Russia. So all of them have been part of the bigger EIF family. And that kind of concludes the recommendations that we have. So you can put many of them in your Christmas baskets, and you know, like, they make for nice presents as well, and will always hopefully make you remember the memories that you have with the EIF. And I want to thank all of you for coming onto this podcast to reflect a little bit on your work and also on the spirit of the EIF. I think it was for us very important that the EIF is not just closing its doors and then it's like fading away into the ether, but that we talk about these things and that they will stay with us and take inspiration for those of you who carry out seminars, who carry on with doing the work in the liberal family, in the liberal movement, because it's very much needed. And through the many years of the EIF's work, I think there are many overlooked best practices because they have not been fully articulated, right? They're in your institutional memory, but it's only that we can see them when we experience them. But we need to articulate them and transfer that knowledge to many other parts of the world. That was always, I think, the EIF's mission. And I hope that this podcast stands in that tradition of maintaining, transferring, and passing on all of that knowledge. I want to take the liberty to thank you, all the three of you, and the extended EIF family for all your service to the great liberal cause and the liberal family. I think the EIF and the Theodor Heuss Academy in particular has always been the home of liberalism. It's just not a place where you hold seminars. That sounds very technical, technocratic, cold. And I think it is never and was never cold, like besides the temperature out there. It was always the home, and Germany would say Heimat, so the real home of freedom. And I think that's what many people associate with it. Whenever they feel that there's a dire threat to liberty in their countries, they remember that there is out there a place that all the liberals can come and go together. And we will. I hope we will have that also in the future. For now, I think we can just hope that we all put our own work together to make that happen, because liberty is losing one of its homes, but it doesn't mean it won't have one in the future. And I think that's all our mission. And for all those listeners out there, don't be scared. The podcast hopefully will continue, and make sure to keep subscribed, because the next one will come into your inbox at one point in time. With that, I want to thank all of you and wish you all the best until the next episode. Over and out.